Mother crooned softly. It is the water the church chooses to make holy and place in its font. It is the water of your baptism. Lies, lies, my father laughed. Through your body runs the salt water of the oceans. It is the water which makes you Maris and not Luna. It is the water that binds you to the pagan god of Siko, the golden carp. Oh, I cried, please tell me. The agony of pain was more than I could bear. The excruciating pain broke, and I sweated blood. There was a howling wind as the moon rose and its powers pulled at the still waters of the lake. Thunder split the air, and the lightning bursts illuminated the churning, frothy tempest. The ghosts stood and walked upon the shore. The lake seemed to respond with rage and fury. It cracked with the laughter of madness as it inflicted death upon the people. I thought the end had come to everything. The cosmic struggle of the two forces would destroy everything. The doom which Siko had predicted was upon us. I clasped my hands and knelt to pray. The terrifying end was near. Then I heard a voice speak above the sound of the storm. I looked up and saw Ultima. Cease, she cried to the raging powers, and the power from the heavens and the power from the earth obeyed her. The storm abated. Stand, Antonio, she commanded, and I stood. You both know, she spoke to my father and my mother, that the sweet water of the moon which falls as rain is the same water that gathers into rivers and flows to fill the seas. Without the waters of the moon to replenish the oceans, there would be no oceans, and the same salt waters of the oceans are drawn by the sun to the heavens, and in turn become again the waters of the moon. Without the sun there would be no waters formed to slake the dark earth's thirst. The waters are one, Antonio. I looked into her bright, clear eyes and understood her truth. You have been seeing only parts, she finished, and not looking beyond into the great cycle that binds us all. Then there was peace in my dreams, and I could rest. 12. Ultima's cure and the golden carp occupied my thoughts the rest of the summer. I was growing up and changing. I had plenty of time to be by myself and to think and feel the magic these events contained. Things were quiet at home since the departure of Leon and Eugene. My father was drinking more than usual. It was because he felt they had betrayed him. He would come home, black from the asphalt of the highway, wash himself out by the windmill, then spend the rest of the afternoon doing small, odd jobs around the rabbit pens. I didn't have to worry much about keeping the animals fed, because he did all the work. He kept a bottle of whiskey out there, and he drank until supper time. I went to call him to supper one afternoon, and I heard him muttering in the dusk. They have forsaken their father, he spoke to the gentle rabbits, which gathered around his feet. They have left me. Oh, he moaned, it was not their fault. I am the fool. I should have known that the Mare's blood in them would make them restless. It is the same blood that sent me to wandering when I was young. Oh, I should have known. I was proud that they would show the true blood of the Mare's, but little did I realize that same pride would make them desert me. Gone. We are all wanderers. And I am here alone.
Papa,
I called.
¿Qué?
He turned.
Oh, it is you, Antonio. It is time for supper, eh?
He came to my side and placed his hand on my shoulder. "Perhaps it is true that the Luna's blood will win out in the end," he said. "Perhaps it is better that way." My mother, too, was very quiet. She tried to cheer herself by saying Andrew was still at home, but Andrew worked all day and was usually in town at night. I only saw him for a few moments at breakfast and at supper time. Mama teased him that he had a girl in town and that soon she and Papa would have to go and speak to the girl's parents. But Andrew remained silent. He would not be drawn into conversation. Of course, my mother had Ultima to talk with during the day, and that was very good for her. Ultima and I continued to search for plants and roots in the hills. I felt more attached to Ultima than to my own mother. Ultima told me the stories and legends of my ancestors. From her I learned the glory and the tragedy of the history of my people, and I came to understand how that history stirred in my blood. I spent most of the long summer evenings in her room. We talked, stored the dry herbs, or played cards. One night, I asked her about the 3 dolls on her shelf. The dolls were made of clay and shellacked with candle wax. They were clothed and lifelike in appearance. "They look familiar," I thought to myself. "Do not touch them," she said. There were many things in Ultima's room that I instinctively knew I should not touch, but I couldn't understand why she was so blunt about the dolls. "One of them must have been left in the sun," I said. I looked closely at one doll that sagged and bent over. The clay face seemed to be twisted with pain. "Come here," Ultima called me away from the dolls. I went and stood before her. Her clear stare fixed me to the spot and made me forget the dolls. "Do you know the man Tenorio?" she asked.
"Yes. He is the man who threatened you at El Puerto when we went to cure my uncle Lucas."
"He is a wicked man," she said. "When you are out alone, fishing along the river, if you see this man, Antonio, you are to keep away from him. Do you understand?"
"I understand,"
I nodded. She spoke very calmly, and so I was not frightened. "You are a good boy. Now come here. I have something for you." She took her scapular from around her neck. "Next spring you will start your catechism, and when you make your first communion, you will receive your scapular. It will protect you from all evil. In the meantime, I want you to wear mine." She took the thin string and placed it around my neck. I had seen my sister's scapulars, and knew that the bit of cloth at the end had a picture of the Virgin or Saint Joseph on it. But this scapular held a small, flattened pouch. I smelled it, and its fragrance was sweet. "A small pouch of helpful herbs," Ultima smiled. "I have had that since I was a child. It will keep you safe."
"But what will you use?" I asked.
"Bah," she laughed. "I have many ways to keep me safe. Now, promise you will tell no one about this." She tucked the scapular under my shirt.
"I promise," I answered.
Another thing I did that summer was to confirm Siko's story. I followed the line of water Siko said was drawn around the town, and it was true. The entire town was surrounded by water. Of course, I didn't go to the hidden lakes, but I could see the obvious truth, nevertheless. The town was ringed by the river, the creek, the lakes, and numerous other springs.
I waited many an afternoon to catch sight of the beautiful golden carp as it swam by, and while I waited in the sun, I pondered over his legend. There were good times, too. Gay times before the awful storm that broke over our house. When the people of Las Pasturas came to town for supplies, they always came to visit with my parents. When they came, my father was happy, not only because they were his people, but because they were a happy people. They were always laughing, and the men's eyes were always bright with the sting of whiskey. Their talk was loud and excited, and there was a song in it. They even smelled different from the people of the town, or my uncles from El Puerto. My uncles were quiet, and the odor around them was deep and quiet, like damp earth. The people from Las Pasturas were like the wind, and the fragrances they carried on their clothing shifted as the wind shifted. The people from Las Pasturas always had stories to tell about the places where they had worked. Sometimes they talked about picking cotton in East Texas, and about running whiskey into the cotton fields of dry counties. Sometimes they talked about picking broom corn, and as they talked and laughed, I could see the rows of green broom corn, and I could smell the sweet scent it left in their sweaty work clothes. Or they would speak about the potato fields of Colorado, and the tragedy that befell them there. They left a son in the dark earth of Colorado, crushed into the tilled earth by a spilled tractor. And then, even the grown men cried, but it was all right to cry, because it was fitting to grieve the death of a son. But always, the talk would return to stories of the old days in Las Pasturas. Always the talk turned to life on the llano. The first pioneers there were sheep herders. Then they imported herds of cattle from Mexico and became vaqueros. They became horsemen, caballeros, men whose daily life was wrapped up in the ritual of horsemanship. They were the first cowboys in a wild and desolate land which they took from the Indians. Then the railroad came. The barbed wire came. The songs, the corridos became sad, and the meeting of the people from Texas with my forefathers was full of blood, murder, and tragedy. The people were uprooted. They looked around one day and found themselves closed in. The freedom of land and sky they had known was gone. Those people could not live without freedom, and so they packed up and moved west. They became migrants. My mother didn't like the people of the llano. To her, they were worthless drunkards, wanderers. She didn't understand their tragedy, their search for the freedom that was now forever gone. My mother had lived in the llano many years when she married my father, but the valley and the river were too ingrained in her for her to change. She made only two lasting friends in Las Pasturas. Ultima, for whom she would lay down her life, and Narciso, whose drinking she tolerated because he had helped her when her twins were born. It was late in the summer and we were all seated around the kitchen table, making our plans to go to El Puerto for the harvest, when my mother, with strange premonition, remembered Narciso. He is a fool. And he is a drunkard. But he did help me in my hour of need.
Ah, yes. That Narciso is a gentleman.
My father winked and teased her.
Bah!
My mother scoffed and went on.
That man didn't sleep for 3 days, rushing around getting things for Ultima and me, and he never touched the bottle. Where was Papa?
Deborah asked.
Who knows? The railroad took him to places he never told me about,
my mother answered angrily.
I had to work, my father said simply. I had to support your family.
Anyway, my mother changed the subject. It has been a good summer at El Puerto. The harvest will be good, and it will be good to see my papa and Lucas. She turned and looked thankfully at Ultima.
This calls for a drink of thanksgiving.
My father smiled. He, too, wanted to preserve the good spirits and humor that were with us that night. He was standing when Narciso burst through the kitchen door. He came in without knocking, and we all jumped from our seats. One minute, the kitchen was soft and quiet, and the next,
it was filled with the huge figure of Narciso. He was the biggest man I had ever seen. He wore a huge mustache, and his hair flowed like a lion's mane. His eyes were wild and red as he stood over us, gasping and panting for breath. Saliva dripped from his mouth. He looked like a huge, wounded monster. Deborah and Teresa screamed and ran behind my mother.
Narciso, my father exclaimed. What is the matter?
De Norio,
Narciso gasped. He pointed at Ultima and ran and kneeled at her feet. He took her hand and kissed it.
Narciso, Ultima smiled.
She took his hand and made him stand.
¿Qué pasa?
My father repeated.
He is drunk,
my mother exclaimed anxiously. She clutched Deborah and Teresa.
No, Narciso insisted. Tenorio, he gasped and pointed to the kitchen door. Grande, you must hide,
he pleaded with Ultima.
You don't make sense,
my father said. He took Narciso by the shoulders.
Sit down. Catch your breath.
Maria, send the children to bed.
My mother pushed us past Narciso, who sank into my father's chair. I didn't know what was happening. Nobody seemed to know. But I was not about to miss the action simply because I was a child. My mother's first concern was to rush the frightened Deborah and Teresa up the stairs to their room. I held back and slipped into the darkness beneath the stairs. I huddled down and watched with anticipation the drama that unfolded as Narciso regained his composure and related his story.
Grande must hide, he insisted. We must waste no time. Even now they come.
Why must I hide, Narciso?
Ultima asked calmly.
Who is coming?
My mother added as she returned to the kitchen. She had not missed me, and I was glad for it.
Narciso roared, Oh my God!
At that moment, I heard Ultima's owl hoot a danger cry outside. There was someone out there. I looked at Ultima and saw her smile vanish. She held her head high, as if sniffing the wind, and the strength I had seen when she dealt with Tenorio at the bar filled her face. She, too, had heard the owl.
We know nothing, my father said. Now make sense, hombre.
Today, Tenorio's daughter, nay, his witch, died. The small evil one died at El Puerto today.
What has that to do with us?
My father asked.
Ay Dios,
Narciso cried and wrung his hands.
Living on this cursed hill away from town, you hear nothing. Tenorio has blamed La Grande for his daughter's death.
He pointed to Ultima.
Ave Maria Purissima,
my mother cried. She went to Ultima and put her arms around her.
That is impossible.
You must take her away, hide her until this evil story is ended.
Again I heard the owl cry, and I heard Ultima whisper.
It is too late.
Bah,
my father almost laughed.
Tenorio spreads rumors like an old woman. The next time I see him, I will pull his dog beard and make him wish he had never been born.
It is not a rumor,
Narciso pleaded.
He has gathered his cronies around him at the bar. He has filled them with whiskey all day, and he has convinced them to burn a witch. They come on a witch hunt.
Ay!
My mother choked a sob and crossed her forehead. I held my breath at what I heard. I could not believe that anyone could ever think that Ultima was a witch. She did only good. Again the owl cried. I turned and stared into the darkness, but I could see nothing. Still, I felt something or someone lurking in the shadows. Else why should the owl cry?
Who told you this wild story?
My father demanded.
Jesus Silva has come from El Puerto. I spoke to him just minutes ago and came running to warn you. You know his word is gold, Narciso answered. My father nodded in agreement.
Gabriel, what are we to do?
My mother cried.
What proof does Tenorio have?
My father asked.
Proof?
Narciso roared. He was now nearly out of his mind with the deliberateness of my father.
He does not need proof, hombre. He has filled the men with whiskey. He has spread the poisonous vengeance into them.
We must flee, my mother cried.
No, Ultima cut in.
She looked at my father and measured him carefully with her intent gaze.
A man does not flee from the truth, she said. Ay grande, Narciso moaned. I am only thinking of your welfare. One does not talk about the truth to men drunk with whiskey and the smell of a lynching.
If he has no proof, then we need not be concerned with the stories a wolf spreads, my father said.
All right, Narciso jumped up. If it is proof you insist on before you hide La Grande, I will tell you what Jesus told me. Tenorio has told the men who would listen to him that he found La Grande's stringed bag, you know the kind the curanderas wear around their neck, under the bed of his dead daughter.
It can't be!
I jumped up and shouted. I rushed to my father.
It couldn't be, Ultimas, because I have it.
I tore open my shirt and showed them the stringed scapular. And at the same time, we heard the loud report of a shot and running men carrying burning torches surrounding our house.
It's them. It's too late.
Narciso moaned and slumped back into the chair. I saw my father look at his rifle on the shelf, then dismissing it, he walked calmly to the door. I followed closely behind him.
Gabriel Mares!
An evil voice called from beyond the dancing light of the torches. My father stepped outside and I followed him. He was aware of me, but he did not send me back. He was on his land, and as such would not be shamed in front of his son. At first, we could see only the flaring light of the piñón torches. Then, our eyes grew accustomed to the dark, and we could see the dark outlines of men and their red, sweating faces by the light of their torches. Some of the men had drawn charcoal crosses on their foreheads. I trembled. I was afraid. But I vowed I would not let them take Ultima. I waited for my father to speak.
¿Quién es?
My father asked. He spread his feet as if ready to fight.
We have no quarrel with you, Mares, the evil voice called out. We only want the witch.
My father's voice was tense with anger now.
Who speaks?
He asked loudly. There was no answer.
Come! Come!
My father repeated, almost shouting.
You know me. You call me by my name. You walk upon my land. I want to know who speaks.
The men glanced nervously at each other. Two of them drew close to each other and whispered secretly. A third came from around the house and joined them. They had thought taking Ultima would be easy, but now they realized that my father would let no man invade his home.
Our business here tonight is not with you, Mares.
The voice of Tenorio squeaked in the dark. I recognized the voice from the bar at El Puerto.
You walk on my land. That is my business,
my father shouted.
We do not want to quarrel with you, Mares. It is the old witch we want. Give her to us, and we will take her away. There will be no trouble. Besides, she is of no relation to you, and she stands accused of witchcraft.
Who accuses her? My father asked sternly. He was forcing the men to identify themselves, and so the false courage the whiskey and the darkness had lent them was slipping away. In order to hold the men together, Tenorio was forced to speak up.
"It is I, Tenorio Trementina, who accuses her," he shouted, and jumped forward so that I could plainly see his ugly face. "La mujer que no ha pecado es bruja. Le juro a Dios."
He did not have a chance to finish his accusation because my father reached out and grabbed him by the collar. Tenorio was not a small man, but with one hand my father jerked him off his feet and pulled the cringing figure forward.
"You are a cabrón," he said, almost calmly into Tenorio's evil, frightened face. "You are a whoring old woman."
With his left hand, he grabbed at the tuft of hair that grew on Tenorio's chin and yanked it hard. Tenorio screamed in pain and rage. Then, my father extended his arm, and Tenorio went flying. He landed, screaming in the dust, and then scrambling to his feet, he ran to find refuge behind two of his coyotes.
"Wait, Mares!"
one of the men shouted and jumped between my father and Tenorio.
"We did not come to fight you. There is no man here that does not hold you in respect. But witchcraft is a serious accusation. You know that. We do not like this any better than you do. But the charge must be cleared up. This morning, Tenorio's daughter died. He has proof that it is Ultima's curse that killed her."
The rest of the men nodded and moved forward. Their faces were sullen. They all held hastily made crosses of green juniper and piñon branches. The light of the torches danced off crosses of pins and needles they had pinned on their coats and shirts. One man had even run needles through the skin of his lower lip so that no curse might enter him. Blood trickled down his lip and dropped from his chin.
"Is that you, Blas Montaño?"
my father asked of the man who had just spoken.
"Si,"
the man answered, and bowed his head.
"Give us the witch!"
Tenorio shouted from behind the safety of his men. He was raging with insult, but he would not approach my father.
"There is no witch here," my father answered, and crouched as if to await their attack. "Tenorio has proof!"
another man shouted.
"Chinga tu madre!"
my father retorted. They were going to have to fight him to take Ultima, but there were too many for him. I thought of running for the rifle.
"Give us the bruja!"
Tenorio shouted. He urged the men forward, and they answered as a chorus.
"Give us the witch! Give us the witch!"
The man with the crossed needles on his lip waved his juniper cross towards the house. The others waved their torches back and forth as they slowly approached my father.
"Give us the witch! Give us the witch!"
they chanted and moved forward, but my father held his ground. The hissing of the torches frightened me, but I took courage from my father. They were almost upon us when they suddenly stopped. The screen door banged, and Narciso stepped forward. Instead of a bumbling drunkard, there now stood in the path of the mob a giant man. He held my father's rifle casually in his hands as he surveyed the mob.
"¿Qué pasa aquí?"
his booming voice broke the tense silence.
"Why are farmers out playing vigilantes when they should be home, sitting before a warm fire, playing cards, counting the rich harvest, eh?" "I know you men. I know you, Blas Montaño, Manuelito, and you, Crucedillo. And I know you are not men who need the cover of darkness to hide your deeds."
The men glanced at each other. The man they considered the town drunk had shamed them by pointing out the lowliness of their deed. One man took a drink from a bottle he held and tried to pass it on, but no one would take it. They were silent.
"You shame your good names by following this jodido Tenorio,"
Narciso continued.
"Ay!"
Tenorio groaned with rage and hate, but there was nothing he dared to do.
"This cabrón has lost a daughter today, and for that,
El Puerto can sleep easier now that her evil doing is gone to hell with her.
Animal,
Tenorio spit out.
I may well be a beast, Tenorio laughed, but I am not a fool.
We are not fools, Blas shouted back. We came on an errand that is a law by custom. This man has proof that the curandera última is a witch, and if it is her curse that caused the death, then she must be punished.
The men around him nodded in agreement. I was mortally afraid that Narciso, like my father, would anger the mob, and we would be overrun. Then I knew they would take Ultima and kill her. Narciso's throat rumbled with laughter.
I do not question your right to charge someone with witchcraft. It is so in custom. But you are fools. Fools for drinking the devil's whiskey.
He pointed at Tenorio.
And fools for following him across the countryside in the middle of the night.
You have insulted me, and for that you will pay.
Tenorio shouted and waved his fist.
And now he calls you fools.
He turned to the men.
Enough of this talking. We came to take the witch. Let it be done.
See,
the men nodded in agreement.
Wait.
Narciso stopped them.
Yes, I called you fools, but not to insult you. Listen, my friends. You have already violated this man's land. You have come and created much bad blood when you could have done this simply. You have the right to charge someone with witchcraft, and to discover the truth of that charge, there is a very simple test.
He reached forward and pulled the needles from the man's lips.
Are these needles holy?
He asked the man.
Si, the man answered. Blessed just last Sunday by the priest.
He wiped the blood on his lip.
I call you fools, because you all know the test for a bruja, and yet you didn't think to use it. It is simple. Take the holy needles and pin them to the door. Put them in so they are crossed. And in the name of God, he roared. You all know that a witch cannot walk through a door so marked by the sign of Christ.
I see,
the men exclaimed. It was true.
It is a true test,
the man called Cruz Cedillo spoke. He took the needles from Narciso.
It is legal in our customs. I have seen it work. But we must all abide by the trial,
Narciso said. He looked at my father. For the first time, my father turned and looked at the kitchen door. In the light, there were two huddled figures of my mother and Ultima. Then he glanced at Narciso. He placed his faith in his old friend.
I will abide by the test, he said simply.
I crossed my forehead. I had no doubt that Ultima could walk by the way of the Holy Cross. Now, everyone turned and looked at Tenorio, for it was he who had accused Ultima.
I will abide, he muttered.
He had no other choice.
I will place the needles,
Cruz Cedillo said. He walked to the door and stuck the two needles in the form of a cross at the top of the doorframe. Then he turned and spoke to the men.
It is true that no person of evil, no bruja, can walk through a door guarded by the sign of the Holy Cross. In my own lifetime, I have seen a woman so judged, because her body burned with pain at the sight of the cross. So, if Ultima cannot step through the threshold, then our work tonight has just begun. But if she crosses the threshold, then she can never again be accused of witchcraft. We call God as our witness.
He finished and stepped back. All the men made the sign of the cross and murmured a prayer. We all turned and looked at the door. The fire from the torches was dying, and in fact some of the men had already dropped their smoldering torches to the ground. We could see Ultima plainly as she walked to the door.
"Who is it that accuses me?"
she asked from behind the screen door. Her voice was very clear and powerful.
"Tenorio Trementina accuses you of being a witch,"
Tenorio answered in a savage, hate-filled voice. He had stepped forward to shout his accusation, and as he did, I heard Ultima's owl shriek in the dark. There was a rustling and whirling of wings above us, and all the men ducked and held their hands up to protect themselves from the attack. But the owl sought only one man, and it found him. It hurled itself on Tenorio, and the sharp talons gouged out one eye from the face of the evil man.
"Hey!"
he screamed in pain.
"I am blinded! I am blinded!"
In the dying light, I saw blood spurt from the dark pit and bloody pulp that had once been an eye.
"Madre de Dios!" the men cried.
They cringed in fear around the screaming, cursing Tenorio. They trembled and looked into the dark sky for the owl, but it was gone.
"Mira!"
one of them cried. He pointed, and they turned to see Ultima. She had walked through the door.
"It is proven!"
Narciso cried. Ultima took a step towards the men, and they fell back. They could not understand why the owl had attacked Tenorio. They couldn't understand the power of Ultima. But she had walked through the door, and so the power of La Curandera was good.
"It is proven," Crucedillo said. "The woman is free of the accusation."
He turned and walked to the hill where they had left their trucks, and several of the men hurried after him. Two stayed to help Tenorio.
"Your evil bird has blinded me," he cried. "For that I curse you. I will see you dead. And you, Narciso, I swear to kill you."
The men pulled him away. They disappeared out of the dim light of the sputtering torches and into the darkness.
"Grande!"
It was my mother who now burst through the door. She put her arms around Ultima and led her back into the house.
"Ay, what a night,"
my father shrugged as he looked after the men who had slunk away. Up on the hill, we heard their trucks start, then leave.
"Someday, I may have to kill that man," he said to himself. "He needs killing,"
Narciso agreed.
"How can I thank you, old friend?"
my father said, turning to Narciso.
"I owe La Grande my life," Narciso said. "And I owe you many favors, Mares. What are thanks among friends?"
My father nodded.
"Come, I need a drink."
They walked into the house. I followed, but paused at the door. A faint glitter caught my eye. I bent down and picked up the two needles that had been stuck to the top of the doorframe. Whether someone had broken the cross they made, or whether they had fallen, I would never know.
13.
We awakened late and hurried to pack for our trip to El Puerto. We did not talk about the awful thing that had happened that night. But I guess it was because of it that my father decided to go with us. We were excited because it was the first time he had made the trip and stayed. He went into town and arranged for a week's leave from his work on the highway. When he returned, I heard him whisper to my mother about the talk in town.
"Tenorio is in the hospital. He has lost the eye. And they say the priest at El Puerto will not allow the dead daughter inside the church for her mass. There is no telling what will happen."
I am glad you are going with us, Gabriel, my mother answered. I went outside. Someone, I guess my mother, had cleaned away the burnt torches and swept clean the patio. There was no trace of what had happened. The sun shone white and clean, and there was chill in the air. I ran to Hassan's and asked him to feed the animals for me while we were gone. When I returned, my Uncle Pedro was already there, helping to load our luggage.
Antonio, he greeted me with an abrazo.
I returned the greeting and went off to find Ultima. I was worried about her, but I found her busy at work cleaning up the morning dishes. Everyone was busy doing something, and that helped us to forget the terror of the night before. Deborah, Teresa, my mother and Ultima rode with my father. I rode with my uncle. We drove in silence, and I had time to think. We drove past Rosie's house, and I thought about the sins of the town, and how the golden carp would punish the sinners. He would drown them in clear blue water. Then we passed the church, and I thought about God's punishment for sinners. He casts them in the burning pit of hell, where they burn for eternity. We passed over the bridge at El Rito, and I remembered Sico's story of the people and the god who became a fish. But why had the new god, the golden carp, chosen also to punish people? The old god did it already. Drowning or burning, the punishment was all the same. The soul was lost, unsafe, unsure, suffering. Why couldn't there be a god who would never punish his people? A god who would be forgiving all of the time. Perhaps the Virgin Mary was such a god. She had forgiven the people who killed her son. She always forgave. Perhaps the best god would be like a woman, because only women really knew how to forgive.
You are quiet, Antonio, my Uncle Pedro interrupted my thoughts. Are you thinking about last night?
No, I replied. I am thinking about God.
Ay, don't let me interrupt you.
Why did you not come to warn us last night? I asked. My uncle frowned.
Well, he said finally, your grandfather would not allow any of us to mix in what took place yesterday.
But Ultima cured my Uncle Lucas. Isn't he grateful for that?
Of course he is, he contended. You just don't understand.
What?
Well, the village of El Puerto is small. We have lived there a long time, and we have lived in harmony with the good and the bad. We have not passed judgment on anyone.
He nodded with some finality. But you allowed Tenorio to pass judgment on Ultima, I said. And if it hadn't been for Narciso, he would have carried out his judgment. Is that fair?
My uncle started to answer, but held back. I saw his hands grip the steering wheel so hard that his knuckles turned white. For a long time he fidgeted. Then he finally said,
it does not decrease my shame to say I was a coward last night. We all were. We took our father's wish as an excuse. Believe me, my faith is bound with that woman for saving Lucas. The next time, and God grant there isn't a next time, I will not shirk my duty to her.
Then he turned and looked at me, and reached out and touched my head. I am glad you stood by your friend, he smiled. That is what friends are for. Yes, I had stood by Ultima, and so had my father, and Narciso, and the owl. We would all have slashed out, like the owl, to protect Ultima. It was not easy to forgive men like Tenorio. Perhaps that's why God could not forgive. He was too much like man. There was a great deal of excitement when we arrived at El Puerto.
Of course, everyone in the village knew what had happened to Tenorio, and all were waiting for him to return to bury his daughter. We knew the priest would not let her be buried in the holy ground of the Campo Santo, next to the church. But harvest time was a time for work, and not for mitote. My uncles were farmers, men who took their only truth from the earth, and so by early afternoon, we were out in the fields and orchards, and the most important thing became the harvest. It was good, too, because it allowed us to forget what we did not want to remember. We returned from the first day of harvest by the first light of the moon as it came through the portal formed by the black mesas. After a heavy supper, we settled in the room of my uncle Mateo, because he was the storyteller. My mother and Ultima kept to themselves, tying the red chile into long, thick ristras. My aunts had been very cordial to Ultima. They treated her with respect because of what she had done for Lucas, but otherwise, they kept their distance from her. I think Ultima liked it that way.
Ay, it is a very bad thing what these Trementinas do, my uncle Mateo whispered. He glanced down the hall, but my grandfather had already retired. My grandfather would not allow any talk of witchcraft in his presence.
I talked to Porfirio Vaca today, my uncle Juan said, and he said the two remaining sisters spent the day making her coffin.
Ah,
my uncle Mateo signaled us to listen.
They were gathering cottonwood branches and weaving a coffin. That proves she was a bruja. A bruja cannot be buried in a casket made of pine or piñon or cedar.
They say Tenorio returned today. He is blind in one eye.
Yes, my uncle continued, and tonight they will gather around the dead body and pray from their black book.
Listen.
We listened to the howl of the cold wind outside and could hear at intervals the bitter bark of a coyote. In the corral, the penned animals milled nervously. Evil was in the autumn night air.
They will burn sulfur instead of holy incense. They will sing and dance around her coffin, pulling at their hair and flesh. They will slay a rooster and spread his blood on their dead sister. Mark my word, when the Trementina bruja is brought into church, it will be in a basket woven of cottonwood branches, and her body will be smeared with blood.
But why do they do this?
Someone whispered.
For the devil, my uncle answered. They do it so that the devil himself will come and sleep with the corpse before it is buried.
Mateo!
One of my aunts cautioned him. She pointed at the children.
It is true, he said.
But why then will they bring her to church?
My uncle Juan's wife asked.
Bah! Little do they care about church. That is only to keep up appearances,
my uncle smiled.
How is it you know all this?
She scoffed.
Why, my sweet Orotea told me.
He grinned and turned to his wife, who sat beside him, and patted her good-naturedly. She looked at him and nodded in agreement. We laughed because we all knew that Orotea, my uncle Mateo's wife, had been deaf and dumb since birth. Sleep came, and with it came my dream fate, which drew me to the witch's black mass. I saw all, and it was exactly as my uncle had described it. Then my dream fate drew me to the coffin. I peered in, and to my horror, I saw Ultima. I must have cried in my sleep, because I felt someone pick me up. And after that, I felt warm and was at peace. When I awoke, it was light outside. The house, which was normally alive and full of creaking, clattering sounds, was still, like a grave. I jumped out of bed, dressed, and hurried outside. The people of the village lined the street. They talked in excited, hushed whispers and craned their necks to look down the dusty street towards the bridge. Then I heard the creaking sound of a heavy, horse-drawn wagon. I spotted Ultima, standing alone on a rise of the ground beside the house. I ran to her and held her hand. She seemed oblivious to me. Her black shawl was drawn around her head and face so that only her eyes remained uncovered. She watched intently the funeral procession that came up the street towards the church. Everyone was quiet. The still morning air carried the creaking sound of the loaded wagon, and we could hear the snorting mules and the squeaking of their harnesses as they tugged and pulled the wagon, carrying the body of the dead woman. On the seat of the wagon sat two thin women, dressed in black. Black veils covered their faces, and as they passed in front of Ultima, they turned away. On the bed of the wagon rested the casket. It was a basket woven from pliant cottonwood branches, so that as the weight of the body inside shifted, the coffin seemed to groan. A strong, rotting odor filled the air as the wagon passed by. At the head of the procession rode Tenorio. He was dressed in black and sat humped in his saddle. He wore a dark, wide-brimmed hat pulled low to cover a black patch over his eye. His spirited horse pranced nervously and tossed its head from side to side. The sky was blue and quiet. Our gazes followed the groaning wagon down the dusty street, past the saloon, to the front of the church. There, the procession stopped and waited for the priest to appear. When he came out of the church, Tenorio spoke to him, and the priest answered. He held out his arms as if to bar entrance to the church and nodded his head. He was refusing the mass for the dead and holy burial in the Campo Santo. The air grew tense. There was no telling what Tenorio would do at this insult. Everyone knew he was crazy enough to assault the priest. But Tenorio was beaten. The entire village was witness to the excommunication. The priest's refusal meant the church was taking its stand, and that the evil ways of the Trementinas were known to all. Tenorio had not thought the priest would stand against him. For a long time there was silence. Then Tenorio turned his horse, and the procession came back down the street. He would have to bury his daughter in unholy ground, and without the saving grace of the Mass, her soul was doomed to perdition. But what hurt Tenorio most was that he would no longer be able to rally the townspeople around him. He would no longer be able to hold them through fear. If the priest, who had for so long been unwilling to condemn the Trementinas' doings, had taken a stand, then surely that would lend courage to the villagers. The sisters slumped in the seat of the wagon as they passed by, and their mournful cries were as much for themselves as for the fate of their sister. They had tampered with a man's fate, and they now knew the consequences. Tenorio, too, leaned forward in his saddle. He had pulled his long, black coat around his thin body and huddled within it, as if he hoped to escape the eyes of the villagers. Only when he passed in front of Ultima did he glance up. And in that swift glance, his evil eye vowed his revenge on Ultima. Everyone was subdued by what had occurred, but by afternoon, the work of the harvest raised our spirits. Under the watchful eye of my grandfather, the bounty of the fields and orchards was gathered. The loaded wagons moved between the fields and the village like ants, scurrying to store their seeds. Green chile was roasted and set to dry. Red chile became huge ristras. The roofs of lean-tos were golden with slices of drying apples. The air was sweet with the aroma of boiling jellies and preserves and the laughter of the women. Corn was roasted to make chicos. Blue corn was ground into meal, and the rest was stored for the animals. Then, as quietly as the green had slipped into the time of the river, the golden time of the harvest was completed. We had to return to Guadalupe. School was starting again.
Adios! Adios!
We called to one another. It was then my Uncle Juan took my father and mother aside and whispered the desires of my uncles.
Antonio has worked well, he said stiffly. He has the feel of the earth in his blood. We would be honored if you saw fit to allow him to spend a summer with us. The others, he said, did not choose our way of life. So be it. But if Antonio is to know our way, we must initiate him next summer.
The rest of my uncles nodded at this brief speech. My uncles were not men of many words.
Oh, Gabriel!
My mother exclaimed, beaming with pride.
We shall see, my father said. And we left.
Catorce.
Adios, Antonio! Adios, mamá. Adios, última.
I waved.
You say the damnedest things, Andrew laughed.
Respect your teacher. Give my regards to Miss Maestas. Do not bring shame to our name.
My mother's voice was distant now.
Why?
I asked Andrew.
I don't know,
he answered as I followed his long strides up the goat path.
Just the way you turn and wave goodbye to Grande and Mama beats all.
I always turn and look back,
I said, falling into the measure of his walk. I was glad to be walking with him.
Why? I don't know. Sometimes I get the feeling that I'll come home and it will all be changed. It won't be the same anymore.
I could not tell him that I wanted the castle of the giants to stand forever, that I wanted the goat path and the hill to be for always. But I had misgivings. I was beginning to learn that things wouldn't always be the same.
I know what you mean,
he said, as Deborah and Teresa passed us by like two wild goats.
When I came back from the army, I felt it had changed. Everything seemed smaller. I'm glad you'll be home,
I said. I clutched my Red Chief tablet and my pencil. I was anxious to see the gang. I wondered how hard the third grade would be.
I feel like an old man going to school. But it's the only way, Tony. The only way.
At the bridge, we met the kid and Samuel. We raced across, and as usual, the brown, savage figure of the kid left us behind. At the end of the bridge, Andrew hung behind to catch his breath, he said, and Samuel and I went on. We passed Rosie's house and headed towards the school. I told Samuel I had seen the golden carp that summer, and he was very pleased.
You might become one of us.
He smiled, his wise, contented smile.
What did you do?
I asked.
I went for you, but you were gone. My father and I herded sheep on the Agua Negra ranch, he said. You know, Tony, he added, I think I'll become a sheep herder.
My mother wants me to become a farmer or a priest, I said. There are rewards in caring for sheep, and there are rewards for tilling the soil. But the greatest calling is to be a priest, he said. A priest is a man who cares for his people.
Yes. I heard about the evil thing they did to Ultima. The story of Tenorio's blinding was throughout the camps.
He paused and looked at me.
You must be careful. The kids in town will not understand.
I will, I said. We reached the tumultuous playground, and I told Samuel that I had to see Miss Maestas. He understood. I wanted to see Miss Maestas and deliver my mother's greetings before I got involved with the gang. Miss Maestas was busy with the first graders, and so I didn't stay long. But she was happy to see me, and I was happy to see her. She hadn't changed much from last year. Then I ran out and joined the gang at our spot on the playground.
Hi, Tony,
they called, and Horse threw me a pass. I caught it and passed it to Florence.
Chingada!
Florence missed it and shagged.
A la beca!
Butterfingers!
Who's your teacher, Tony?
Miss Harris or Miss Violet?
Don't know.
Miss Violet, Bones cried out. We all got Miss Violet. Chingada, I told you.
How do you know?
Lloyd asked.
They give the dumb kids to Miss Violet.